Good morning, and thank you for tuning in today. You are listening to Behind the Words, a broadcast of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. I am your host, Lori Hayes. If you are listening online, please click follow. And if you would like to know more about our network and this show, please find us on Facebook and Twitter at Authors on the Air and BTW on Air. And I'm super excited to share with you guys our new website, so be sure to check us out on www.authorsontheair.com. You can find past episodes, blogs by our guests and hosts, and information about the network and more. Be sure to check it out. So to continue with the November of Thankfulness that we started last week, I want to give a special shout-out to all of our listeners. Without you, there would be no Behind the Words or Authors on the Air. I appreciate your support of our network and our fabulous guests who come on to chat with us each week. We love you and welcome your feedback and comments, and be sure to connect with us online. So that brings us to today's show. I am so excited to introduce you to my guest, Sable Hunter. When I first started Behind the Words many months ago, Sable was one of the first authors I knew I'd want to talk to. She was one of the first ones that I reached out to as soon as I said yes to Pam Steck. Not only does she write amazingly hot stories about amazingly hot cowboys and some other yummy characters, she is just a beautiful human being all around. She's genuine and honest and sincere with her readers and just all around a fascinating person. So I hope you will welcome me in joining Sable Hunter to Behind the Words. Good morning, Sable. How are you today?
Good morning, and what a gracious welcome. Thank you for having me.
Oh, well, I'm so glad that you're able to join us this morning. So, Sable, I can't even remember how I bumped into you. I imagine it is through the Ryan O'Leary, the infamous Ryan O'Leary on Facebook, that we crossed paths. And And I was immediately intrigued by you because you just have this gracious way with words and encouraging your fans to and engaging everybody online. And so I think that you're really awesome, and I cannot wait to learn a little bit about you. So tell our listeners who I have not been introduced to your wonderful books a little bit about you and how you became an author.
Well, I'm just a regular girl next door. I live in the South. I spend my time in Texas and Louisiana, anywhere from Austin to New Orleans. I have a place on the lake in East Texas, and I try to write about what I know and about the people I know. Not that any particular character is real, it's just a conglomeration of experiences that I've had. And I have been writing since probably early 2010. I have about 22, 23 books out right now. I'm not real sure, because I have different versions. I have a sweeter version out now, and I'm also putting out some other languages, but about 22 regular English books, I think. And I try to write stories that I think that people will not only be turned on by, but they'll get immersed in the characters and maybe even see themselves a little bit. I try to make my characters real. Now, my men are pretty well perfect, but my female, I try to let every woman be able to look in there and say, well, you know, I can see myself in that character. And it gives them hope, and it lets them dream, and gives them something sometimes to just hold on to. When I write, a lot of times I'm escaping the world that I live in and trying to immerse myself into a world that I'll feel more comfortable in. And I'm just grateful that the readers love to share the world.
Yes, well, definitely. It's hard not to like to share that world, to be honest. It is so affectionately known as a saucy romance writer. Tell us how you decided to write in this genre. And I have to say, so you mentioned that you tend to write what you know, and that intrigues me. so tell me about your cowboy,
Sable. You have to
Sable.
Understand a lot of those things are fantasy. Well, at least we'll say they are anyway. Well, I tend to get my inspiration from several places. A lot of times it's from people I didn't know. And I will admit, a lot of my books, there are real experiences in it, especially the funny things. The time that Avery got the microphone hung in her mouth, that really happened to me. A lot of the stories that are told in there are just family stories. In fact, if something happens around me, it's liable to end up in a book. So, but now the sex sometimes I get my inspiration from late night Cinemax.
Awesome. But,
and then just, you know, talking to people, and experiences tend to work their way in there also. But I try to make the sex the way it should be in my thinking. I want people to read it and not only be turned on, but just be touched, to have their heart strings tugged. And love is one of the greatest gifts that we have, and we should celebrate it every day. But as far as how I got into the genre, I can tell you the day it happened. I hadn't read in a long time. I read when I was a teenager, and then experiences in my life came along, and I got away from it, hurt, disappointment, and things like that. And I can remember one day I got on the computer and I found Leslie Kelly's Slow Hands, and it was a free read, and I downloaded it. And I hadn't read a romance novel, like I said, in so long, and it touched my heart. And I got to look at it, and I said, oh, I like it. So I started hunting books that were similar. And that was really before I discovered the erotic romance genre per se, and I couldn't find a lot of the things I wanted to read. So I had always written for my own pleasure, so I decided to attempt to write a book to sell. So I wrote it. The first book I wrote was A Wishing Moon, and it's a paranormal erotic romance. And then I went on from there. I wrote Trouble and Unchained Melody. And about that time, I discovered something online about Amazon's Kindle, publishing yourself. So I found someone local that knew more about computers than I did, and she helped me. And we put them up, and for some odd reason, they began to catch on. And that was back in 2010, so this is quite a long time ago. Mm-hmm. And then a publisher noticed me, and I sold 7 books to Secret Cravings. And then I decided to go back out on my own again. So it's been a process. So I've been published and I've been self-published, and now I'm even publishing other people's work. So,
yeah.
But anyway, I thought I got to reading the erotic romance, and I thought, well, now this is great. You get to not only get the love story, you get a lot of intrigue sometimes. I mean, in my books, I have everything from serial killers to drug cartels to paranormal events. You know, I try to have everything. A lot on my McCoy series, I tend to maybe compare it sort of to more romantic Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, the TV show Dallas.
Uh-huh.
But I tend to try to write things that when people get to the bedroom door and they know that couple's about to go in and make love, my bedroom door's open in the book, and we get to go in and sit down by the side of the bed and take notes.
Bedroom
know what they're feeling. I want to know what they're feeling. I want to feel it too. I want the excitement of that first kiss. I want the thrill of the touch, the absolute delight at the climax. I want to feel everything that the heroine and the hero are feeling, and I want my reader to feel it too. And then I think I've succeeded.
Yes, definitely. So, I've read both romance and erotica, and some books have a really hard time bridging both. So, you know, of course, in erotica, there's love and all of that. Some of it's just real raw and real, and romance tends to be more soft and touching and loving. And so, did you find it was difficult to kind of put those two together and tie it in without it being too much romance and not having it be too much erotica? What was that journey like?
Well, I think I just accidentally stumbled upon a good formula. I wrote it the way I wished that I could live it. I just absolutely wrote it as if I could step into the book, and I would have been a amazing experience for me. I tried to put... I can't tell you that I said, okay, I'm going to put 8 sex scenes in the book or anything like that. Although after I wrote a couple, I sort of figured out about what would, you know, make about 100,000. I write books between 55 and 120,000, depending on the story I want to tell. Mm-hmm. And I look in there about how many sex scenes, and it's not really a formula. I just try to make it seem genuine. Mm-hmm. And I have had a little bit of, you know, people will say, well, there's just too much sex here, although I can't imagine there being too much sex. But I do try to get the full story in either way. I mean, there's always, my story sometimes, Ryan said the other day, it's just a soap opera. I said, well, yeah. pretty much, because it's a continuing story. So I try to make it where people, they get a satisfying end in every book. Because the couple, whatever I'm dealing with, they have their HEA, you know, their happy ever after. But I also let the story of the series or the family continue. So in every book, you get a little taste of everybody you've ever known, and you keep up with everybody. But yet, you know, there's always some satisfaction in the book also.
Mm-hmm. Now, I love that. Series can be challenging like that, both for the reader and mm-hmm. for the author, I imagine. Now, I'm not an author, so I can't speak from experience, but I've read series that are similar, you know, not necessarily alike, but similar to your style in Hell Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you have this family of cowboy brothers, mm-hmm. and so you go through each of them and their relationships throughout. How was it to continue on? Tell us how your stories progress. Do you end the story and then carry on with, like, scenes from that story in the book, in the first book into the second book, or do you kind of just cut it off and start fresh as you go on through each of the books? What does that look like?
Well, my stories tend to overlap. In fact, the Hell Yeah have taken, all of them have taken place in a fairly short period of time. And so there is some repeat. I try not to let it be boring. I want everybody to be able to pick up any one of the books if they've not read any of the others and be satisfied. So okay. Therefore, there is some repeat information. I wouldn't call them spoilers, because I try not to you know, let everything hang out. But yet, if you pick up one, you go, oh man, I want to know more about Joseph and Katie, what their relationship, how it started, and they can go back. And I try to make them woven together so that the storyline continues, but yet each book tells the romance and the excitement of that particular couple's journey to the altar or, you know, to commitment. And I've had pretty good luck with it so far, I think. I have done something fairly intriguing and frustrating to my readers. In book 8 or book 9, Aaron McCoy, I think it's book 8, Aaron McCoy goes missing on his honeymoon, and he's the elder brother, the patriarch of the family,
the one that everybody
fell in love with first. And
yeah.
So when they find out that Libby and Aaron went on their honeymoon and he goes missing, you know, you just would not believe it, the letters I've had. You go, what have you done to Aaron? Where is Aaron? And if you've killed off Aaron, I'm never speaking to you again. And I mean, I get like maybe 5 or 6 letters a day. It's been crazy. So now, you know, I've got 2 more books that are coming out before Christmas, and the mystery of Aaron will be resolved. Not that the series is discontinuing, but Aaron's part, you know, the mystery will be solved. And that's been great. I've loved that. I've loved the excitement. I've loved the way that the readers sort of, you know, get involved and invested in the characters, because they start talking about them like, you know, they know them better than they know me. And, you know, and that's great to have created something that, you know, that there's a group of people out there that follow it and love it and are hungry for it. And that's amazing to me.
So absolutely. I'm not even sure
if I answered your question.
No, you did. Absolutely. I didn't ask it very well, so I think you made it more sense out of it than I did. But that speaks miles to you as an author. But I think it also speaks a lot to how you engage your fans, too, your readers, because when you can get an audience so invested in your characters that you're getting hate mail for something that you did to one of them, that's fabulous. I love that. That just means that like you said, they are absolutely invested in your story, and that's not an easy thing to accomplish when you're an author. So kudos on that. That's awesome. I can't wait to get that far in your series to be mad at you. So I'm going back just a little bit. I'm curious because, you know, I've talked to the majority of the authors that I talk to tend to be in the supernatural and the horror genres, and I always dig down into the horror ones because it just, you know, I'm fascinated about how somebody can write something that's so dark and twisted. So on the flip side of that, what is it like to write in the erotica romance? Do you have to put yourself in a special mindset? Do you have to sit back with a bubble bath and a glass of wine to get yourself in the mood? Or how do you get there to be able to really dive into these scenes and make them so realistic for your readers?
I tend to get my best ideas in the shower. But now I will admit, I fantasize. I create those characters. I sit down and I write their history from A to Z. I just finished redoing Noah and Sky's history, because that's what the book that's coming out soon, Sky Blue. It's Noah McCoy's. He's the next to the youngest brother. And he's been the a-hole the whole time. So everybody's wondering how I'm going to redeem Noah. And I think I've come across something that's really going to surprise the readers a great deal. But I tend to try to put myself into the shoes of the heroine. I actually try to feel what she's feeling. I try to fall in love with the hero. I actually print out pictures of what I think they look like, and I'll sit and stare at them. And I really have detailed fantasies. And I don't know what that says about me as a person, but I can actually lay down or in the recliner or in the bed or wherever, and I go through that sex scene completely from beginning to end, where he's going to touch her, how he's going to touch her, how she's going to respond. And I go through it in my head, and if it turns me on, then I imagine it's going to turn somebody else on. And then I actually sit down and start writing it, and I try to use words and dialogue as, you know, dialogue as it goes through. It's not just mechanical sex. I don't like to read sex manual scenes. I don't care about, I mean, I want to know where he puts his hand. I want to know what he touches, how he touches. But I want him to tell her, you know, you're the sweetest thing I've ever touched. I would rather be with you than anybody else in the world. I want to know how he's feeling and how she responds. And so I try to get the plot moves along through the sex scene. Usually something will come out that's said or done that will advance the plot. But the emotion in it to me is as critical as the penetration or the orgasm. So, but it's all important. And I have a breast fetish. Everybody knows that by now. So I tend to use a lot of, breast play in the book.
That must be why you get along with Ryan so well.
Well, a guy told me the other day, says, you know, we know any guy would know exactly how to woo you if they read the book. So.
That's
so Ryan's
awesome.
a big help to me. He and I work closely together. He helps me with the sweeter versions. We also write together, and we're also in the company, Buku, together. So, yeah, he's
excellent.
A big help.
Great, great. So that's fascinating, Sable. I love that. We just learned a little bit about you there.
Yeah.
So I mean that it almost makes it more real when you think about it, because because of the process that you have to go through to get there. So that's really fabulous. And I'll have to say, you know, I'm embarrassed to say I've read quite a few of these, you know, erotica books.
Oh yeah.
In my time, you know, I had first, believe it or not, sadly, the very first book that I had ever read in the erotica genre was that wonderful book, 50 Shades of Grey. I know that there's tons of things there that, varying opinions about that series, but it was the first encounter I had ever had with the genre. So I became intrigued by it, not necessarily because of the sex, but because of exactly what you just said, how it progresses. And I feel like if I read an erotica story or erotica romance where you can pull and you can progress the plot, like you said, through a sex scene, I mean, that just adds that more element to it, and it makes it that much more real. And you did that well in your books, and I can tell, because yours wasn't just like the Cinemax Red Shoes Diary version, where you go and that's it. That's all it is, a sex, and then it's done. And yours actually does progress through it, and it was more realistic. The words that you used were not the "I would never say that in the bedroom" kind of thing. Like, right, that can't possibly be real. yours, I can actually visualize and happening. So that's not something that is done very well in that genre, I don't think. So that was one of the things I appreciated about your books.
Thank you.
My pleasure. So tell us about the sweeter version now. What is that all about?
Well, I had people that would read my books that said, you know, I would love for my mother to read this. I'd love for my daughter to read this, but I just can't. I don't want, you know, because the erotic versions I used were the four-letter words for the sex parts, or I used the more graphic terms. Not that there's not sensuality, and not that they're not done in a loving way. I try to write every sex scene as tender and fulfilling as I possibly can. But in the erotic versions, people tend to want to know or want to be able to experience it, so I say it explicitly. I would never, I do not classify my work, even in the most erotic version, as smut or as porn. Mm-hmm. I consider it to be very, very, you know, loving sex, how it should be. But there were some words and some gestures or some ways of saying things in there that some people just do not like to read. But they love the story and they love the tenderness. So what I did, and Ron helped me do this, we went through the books and he would highlight for me, he says, well, let's change this part, let's say it this way. And we worked through it until we could bring those sex scenes up to a mainstream level, that the sex scene is still there in its entirety, but the way it's worded is less offensive to some people than it would be to others. So the stories are the same. There's very, very little difference in the storyline at all. We tried to keep it, unless, and I will admit this, he would go through there, he'd say, you know, a guy would say this. Or, you know. So we worked a little bit more banter in a couple of places, but eventually we'll go back and even change that in the erotic versions. But they're just the same story, and it's I guess you'd say instead of it being X-rated, it's more R-rated.
Okay,
maybe.
Excellent. So tell me how that's going to look when you're publishing these stories. Are they going to have different titles, or how are you going to be able to market these
well,
and separate them?
Well, I've already
them?
Done it. I have. Oh, we okay. have. We've already done. We've done Cowboy Heat, Hot on a Trail, Her Magic Touch, Brown Eyed Handsome Man, Badass, and Burning Love. We just finished, and Ron is working on Forget Me Never Now, and so we've got at least five out there. And it actually says Cowboy Heat, sweeter version.
Okay.
And then there is a Cowboy Heat. But when you look down at the description of the sweeter version, it says, you know, warning to my faithful readers, this is the same book as the erotic version. It has just been tamed down for the mainstream audience. So I've tried to be very clear. It's like when you go to a restaurant and you say, well, I want to, you can either order a Coke or a Diet Coke. You know, it's just a choice. It's the same
Absolutely.
Book. It's like I wouldn't call it an edited version because it's not shorter. It's just tamer.
Okay, excellent. Well, that's very interesting. I love that you're able to do that to so you can expand your reach to a broader you know readership. That's great. So we've talked about the Hell Yeah series, about your cowboy brothers, but tell us about what other series that you have in the works.
Okay, well, I will tell you, in the Hell Yeah, it's not just the brothers; it's their friends also. There's a Cajun portion of it that actually Joseph McCoy, who is the daredevil of the brothers, had a best friend. His name is Bola Blonde. He's in Louisiana. So actually, the story skips over. There's three Cajun books, and there's going to be more. But the McCoys are part of it. I mean, they only live about 5 hours apart, and there's a lot of interaction between the two. The characters cross over. There's advances in the McCoy plot line in the Cajun part. But so it's all the Hell Yeah, but it's not restricted just to the six brothers. In fact, I'll See You in My Dreams was the lawyer, the blind lawyer friend of the McCoys. And in that book, we meet some relatives of the McCoys, so it's just going to go on forever.
Awesome.
I think I've got like 12, by the end of the year there'll be like 12 books of the Hell Yeah, and there's probably 12 more.
Wow.
My brother, he helps me. His name is Jess, and he writes also, and he also helps in the company and does a lot of editing for me, and he calls it the Hell Yeah universe. You know, that we've created a little world, and it's all the people inside it. In fact, Ron and I are writing a book called Thunderbird, which will also be part of the universe, but it's not, you meet new people. But everybody knows everybody else. You know, it's just like the real world. Everybody's connected, like the Kevin Bacon syndrome. You know, how many people can you say, you know, trace back to Kevin Bacon? So,
that's awesome.
We've created a different world, and tying together the books makes people happy, because if they go back, I got a letter the other day and go, I can't believe you worked Aaron into the story. I just put out a book with a novella with Desiree Holt, Sandy Sullivan, and Becky McGraw, and it's called Santa Wore Spurs. And my part of that book is called Breath of Heaven. And in the book, it's about a ranch family that lives on El Camino Real Ranch, or El Camino Ranch, and they're the King family. Yet when Cade gives Abby her Christmas present, he actually gives her an Aaron McCoy sculpture. And so, you know, I tie, and somebody goes, I can't believe you mentioned Aaron in the book, you know. So it thrills them, you know. So I like that. I like to tie everything together so that this is a real world and these are real people in this world and, you know, they may cross paths or they might have went to school together or whatever. But other than that, let me, we have a serial that we've got behind on, Ryan and I have, called It's Just Sex. And we've got Green with Envy out, and we hope to put out the second portion of it after Christmas.
Okay.
I have some series that are with Secret Cravings Publishing right now that I'll be expanding in the next couple of years. One of them is called Texas Heat, and the books are Trouble and Maya Leah. Maya Leah even has a Mossad agent in it. It's quite interesting, Texas Rangers working with the Mossad. Then I have a paranormal series called Moon Magic, and I have two books there, Wishing Moon and Sweet Evangeline, and they cross over in some ways with the McCoys. It's not really been brought out yet, but Katie, who is Joseph's wife or will be his wife at some point, is going to be related to those people that I'll eventually reveal. And then there's another series called Hill Country Heart, Unchained Melody, Scarlet Fever, and Bobby Does Dallas. But anyway,
awesome.
They're all Texas cowboys or Cajuns, you know, people that I know. My brother's working on a series called Hero, and I'm helping him. So we have a lot going on. We really do.
Goodness gracious, you keep busy for sure, woman. Well, I want to touch on a couple of things that you mentioned. One is the collaboration. So I know that you've collaborated with Ryan O'Leary, and then you have the series Santa Does Spurs?
Santa Wore Spurs.
Spurs.
Collaborate. It's just we just put four books under
under one thing.
They're not
okay.
related. The books aren't related, and they're just a Christmas collection.
Okay, but you did collaborate with Ryan.
Yes, we write together.
Right. Okay. So, what does that look like to write a book with another author?
Oh, it's quite interesting. I will tell you, he is the most gracious person to work with that you can imagine. We come up with an idea. I come up with part of the plot. I send it to him. He adds, subtracts, puts in what he thinks. We start working on the characters. We start breaking down the scenes. I'll say, I'll write this one, you write this one. We exchange, we add two, then we try to see where it's going. So we actually, you know, exchange pieces of writing and start weaving it together. I write sex one way. He writes it another way. He's a little bit more, I have to see this because I offended him one time when I said it just so. He writes it a little bit more exciting sometimes than I do. Well, from a guy's perspective. But he takes it and he'll go now. He's disabled. The guy's not going to do this. Or, you know, it frightens me out. And then I'll say, oh, yes, but the girl would. So we go back and forth about what will work. And but usually, you know, if I want something one way, he just will bend over backward trying to make it happen. But he can take a scene sometimes and make it sweeter. Sometimes he can make it funnier. Sometimes the banter he puts in between the guys is hilarious. So we both have our strengths. And together, I think, we're able to put out a product that is very pleasing.
Yes, definitely. It was a very exciting read. And it's fun because, you guys have two different styles, but yet you still have this underlying tone to your writing that works, that connection that just I could definitely see that going far. So that's really fabulous. I love that. And then the other thing I want to talk about is you mentioned all of these different series that you have going on. And I remember there being a post on Facebook a few days ago where you're like, okay, I'm writing this and I'm writing this and I'm writing this. I think I've got like three or four series going and, you know, am I crazy or something? I forget. So what is that like? How do you keep it straight?
Well, not very well. I right now I'm working on Sky Blue, and I'm working on the Christmas gift I'm going to give people, which will be Aaron's Homecoming, and it's going to be an entirely separate book called I'll Remember You, and it'll be told from Aaron's point of view and what's been going on with him and how it's affected him and how it's going to affect the family. And by the time I'm through with that book, it's going to be like a Christmas special on TV. We're going to have a wedding. This baby's going to be born. It's going to be a very emotional book, but it'll be a very satisfying book. It will not be the end of the series by any means, but it'll be a very satisfying a culmination of the plot lines that have been up in the air to this point. I'm also working on a novella for the magazine, which is a Hell Yeah novella, which I'm working on Lance Rogers. He's their foreman, which is also Skye's brother, who is will be marrying Noah. So that's going to be something that will be in the magazine. It's going to come out every 3 months, and there will be about, 6,000 or 7,000 words in that. And, of course, when I get that told, then I'll publish it. It will be available to publish also. I'm working on something called Pretty Face that is going to be completely different, and it may end up being a standalone. And it's about a writer who meets someone online and the mess that they get into. Then I have other things going on, too, with Jess that we're working on with Ron. But right now what happens, I'll write until I get frustrated with something and I have to put it down. I'll go to something else. Hmm. But I work from about 7 in the morning. Last night I worked at 2 o'clock.
Wow.
And I don't really take a lot of time off. And now when I do, sometimes I go off on vacation, but a lot of times when I go, I'm researching for a book, I'm taking pictures for the magazine, I have working vacations, but I love this stuff. I breathe and eat this stuff. So working on several series at a time is keeps me interested, I guess you can say.
Definitely keeps you fresh. So
yeah.
You mentioned that you have both been published and you are self-published and
yes.
You have your own business that is now
yes.
publishing and the magazine.
Yes.
So you
yes.
wear a lot of hats, Sable. Goodness,
I do.
You just made me dizzy right there. So tell, what is it? First, I would like to look at, before we go into your publishing and your magazine and stuff, what is the difference to you between being published and being a self-published author? And if you had to pick one route, do you think you would stick to just one of them?
I learned so much in excuse me, very valuable information going through a publisher. So I would never discount that. I learned so much from the editors. I learned from the ones who helped me with the publicity, with just the mechanics of getting a book published. Excuse me, I had a frog in my throat. So I would never, say that you should only pursue being self-published. But on the contrary or on the opposing side, at this point in time, there is so much freedom and opportunity for authors. If they have a quality product, if they can get it edited, if they know how to do it as far as, how to put the book together, the doors are so open that they can make an impact, they can make sales, they can connect with their readers, and they can do all of this on their own. Now, I will tell you this, it's a very difficult job. Promoting and publishing and getting a book out in front of readers is as much work or more work than writing the book. But one is as important as the other. Publishers nowadays have a tendency to, let the authors do a lot of their promoting and marketing themselves. And that's good because they need to know how. But I think publishers ought to be more invested in individual authors than maybe they are now. So I have taken what I've learned in the publishing company. I was fairly successful on my own. In fact, my most profitable series is my self-published series, the Hell Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that I've learned things that now I can take and help other writers make their journey a little bit easier. And I'm doing it in the ways that I wish that I could be with a publishing company. So I'm trying to bring the best of both worlds together. But if a person wants to be self-published and has the energy and the drive and is willing to dig for the knowledge to do it, I applaud them. There are some great self-published authors out there now, and I had an amazing experience doing it. And so I encourage them to either journey that they choose or either path that they choose, that this is an unprecedented point in time that we have the ability to put a book out there, have it sold in Japan, speak online to the reader in Japan, get feedback. I mean, it's an instantaneous thing now. I wouldn't trade it for anything in the world.
That's
I'm just
awesome.
Daily shocked about what is possible.
That's true. That's true. So I'm curious really quick now. I've heard, and I haven't done a ton of research into it, but there's been some rumors in the pipeline about the self-published erotica genre having some trouble because of something that happened, I don't even know where, but being pulled from Amazon. Have you experienced anything like that, or have any of the authors that you network with?
I had two connections that experienced something, but they were both very, very well thought of authors, and Amazon put their books back up. I think it was an overreaction, maybe, in some cases, but it's not the erotic romance industry or self-published per se. It was certain elements of those stories that they thought was going a little too far,
mm-hmm.
maybe not too far, but was too available to minors. And
okay.
I'm talking bestiality, incest, and rape. I
okay.
did not have any of my books affected, none that I'm published that affected. I don't even know anybody in my publishing company that I'm with that was affected.
Okay.
So the two people I knew that were, that they were immediately, once they contacted Amazon and go, hey, what's going on, they were put back up.
Okay. Interesting. So. Very good.
That's not to say that I didn't go out and check every 3 hours to see if my books were still there.
I'm sure.
You could ask Ron, you could ask Barb. I went through about two or three days of like, oh God.
Major panic. I don't think you're alone in that, Sable.
Nothing happened. Nothing happened.
Yeah.
So.
Well, you know, the rumors get blown out of proportion and then everybody
yeah.
starts panicking. And so I'm sure that you're not alone. That's why I was curious to see, because I didn't really do a whole lot of digging into that whole scenario. So tell us about your company then, your publishing company.
Okay. Well, we have a company called Buku, which means very much, or you've heard of Merci Buku, which
mm-hmm.
means thank you very much. So this is very much is the idea of we're offering more. And we have three arms of the company. We have a publishing company where we're offering a little bit higher royalties than maybe you might get elsewhere. We're offering full service, and by that means I'm going to be very invested in promoting, getting like radio spots for my authors, getting interviews, taking out ads for them, promoting them on like free days on Amazon, doing everything I can. I'm going to try to treat their books like I treat mine.
Mm-hmm.
And right now I have 20 authors already, and I haven't
wow.
really even put any, we don't even have submission guidelines on the website yet, but these people have been so marvelous to work with. They've sent me their books. I've read them. I've got three editors working with me now. Of course, Ron is there. He's always involved. Barb Caruso is our tech genius that helps us both. We have Debbie Workman that works on promotions. We have a street team of almost 200. So, and I also have a one that helps me with finance. My brother also helps editing. So there's a lot of us working together.
Mm-hmm.
But we're trying to build a publishing company. And it's going
Excellent.
To be not just romance, not just erotic romance. We've also already got mysteries, thrillers, historical fiction, children's books, all types, young adult, new adult, sci-fi, fantasy. You know,
wow.
we're working on all the genres. We're also putting out a magazine that will come out this winter, and it will be a celebration of all the good times. In fact, the name of it is Le Bon Temps, which means the good times, and there will be everything in it from author profiles to, in fact, Bella Andre has a piece in it, Desiree Holt, Lexi Blake. I have a lot of the authors that I've worked with through the years that have written articles about what inspires them. I've got travel articles about places that inspire, short stories. I think I've got about a dozen, including one of my own, one of Ryan's is in there.
Wow.
We've got poetry. We've got recipes, book reviews, movie reviews. it's just everything that's fun is in the magazine. And it's going to be probably about 100 pages. We're going
wow.
to be putting up two teaser articles within the next couple of weeks so people can get ads. We're going to have very reasonable advertising in it, subscriptions. So the first one is going to be something that is really almost an offering to people and to see if they like it. I think the price that we'll be asking for it is more than paid for with the short stories that are in it, because I've got short stories of all kinds. Now, this is not an erotic magazine. This is a general
mm-hmm.
audience magazine. So the stories in there, even my Hell Yeah novella is going to be PG-13. It's
wow.
going to be just something that, you know, if your teenager picks it up, there's not going to be anything in there that will offend at all. It'll be available on apps as well as in print version, but the print version is like our e-books, when we put them out in print, they're going to be on demand. You know, I'm not trying to get it in Walmart or something like that. But it will be available in almost every format that you can think of. So I think it's going to be fun.
Yeah, that sounds really fun. I look forward to that. So I will definitely be keeping an eye out for that to come out here. It's very good. So you are very active online, and you've mentioned a few people that help you along the way that are part of your company, but I noticed that they're part of groups, and they help with promotions and parties and stuff online. So tell us about how your interactions online and with your readers plays into your journey as an author.
This is going to be, I'll tell you, I used to have more time to do it. My policy is that I answer every email. And at first that was quite easy to do. It got more difficult when the emails grew to the extent that they are now. I try to answer every message. I try to participate. I don't participate the way I used to because sometimes I'm editing three books, trying to go through editing and writing. I don't have the time. Ryan and I have, and Barb, we've all struggled with that idea, you know. But having said that, I value my readers above all things. Without them, then I might as well, just crawl in a hole. So I try to make them understand, and this is an absolute truth, that I value their opinion. I am interested in them as a person. I'm a real individual that could come sit on my porch and rock and drink lemonade. I'm as plain as sliced bread next door. There's absolutely, I can be their friend. I can't be everybody's best friend because I don't have time, but I'm real. And if they have an opinion, a question, a comment, I welcome that and consider it to be as valuable as if I got a review from the New York Times. I mean, it's just, my readers, if they want to tell me what they like or they dislike or what they wish I would do or how – I've had readers I got the sweetest letter one time from a little lady in South Louisiana, and she told me, I've got cancer. She says, I'm trying to stay alive until you get the next book out. And I'm like, oh, God, I'm going to write fast. I'm so sorry.
Wow.
And then I've had one that said, I have dyslexia. I can relate to Jesse. I've had one that says, well, I've have diabetes. Or they look at my characters, and they can see part of themselves in there, and they tell me about. They tell me their stories, if they've been abused or if they've been raped or, whatever, some way that I could touch them. And I listen, and I'll tell them, well, I am so sorry, or I'll pray for you. So I try to be, when they write me, they sort of expect, this person understands me. And I try to fulfill their expectations as much as I possibly can. So, I do reach out. And do I reach out as much as I used to or I wish I could? No. But I do the very best that I can.
Excellent. Well, that goes a long way, and that's probably a very big play. And, of course, aside from your fabulous books, great example of your success, because when you're able to connect with your readers like that, it does bring our experience to an entirely different level. And like we mentioned before, your readers get invested in your stories and your characters, and to the point where you get angry mail when you do something to one of them. I'm sure that happens to an extent to the authors that we see on the shelves in the bookstores, but it's really a whole lot more real when the author is genuine and you feel like you're actually getting something back from the actual author versus their publicist. So and I'm sure I can imagine. I mean, your books are so successful that you do get a lot of messages and emails and mail from hundreds of people. And the fact that you even attempt to keep up with it it speaks miles to you as a person. And
well, thank you.
One of the reasons I'm so honored to be able to speak with you.
So, it's a pleasure.
I'm curious now, you have some really hot covers. So how do you pick out a cover for your books?
Well, I have a vision in my mind of what the guy looks like. Now, I will admit I am partial to Jimmy Thomas, and he has been very, very nice to me. He has a place where you can go and look at his photos. You can talk to people that works for his company that makes photos. I have developed a relationship with one of them that has really gone out on a limb to help me get what I want. So I have about three cover artists. One of them, who, of course, works with the company. Barb is part of the company, and she does an amazing job for me. And then I have two others that if we can't find exactly what we're looking for, that they'll search for it for me. So I go by vision, like Noah for my new Sky Blue is the only blonde McCoy. So I had to find somebody that looked like that. I had to find a Native American girl. I know what my characters look like, so I try to give, and I try to let the cover needs to say something to me. So, yeah, I want them to be hot, but I want them to like on Burning Love. I don't know if you've read Burning Love. It's the Cajun story, and the front of the cover is just one of the hottest things you've ever seen. It's a hunky Jimmy Thomas. He has no shirt on. He's holding that mane of dark hair back with one hand. He's looking down, and the girl is kneeling at his feet, and she's licking his belly button. And I want to tell you, I wrote that scene into the book.
I remember you saying something about that.
Yeah. And so, you know, I've had comments going, you know, oh, man, I love that cover, and I love the scene. So, yeah, I try to make the scenes, you know, the covers mean something. So
yeah.
Finding Dandy, the cover, the scene is in the book. You know, so it's just you want them to be able to read a little bit and then go back and look at that cover and sigh and then go read a little bit more. And when they fantasize, in fact, one of the authors that I've been trying to, we were publishing, we've been helping him with his marketing, and he writes this fantastic, his name is Mike Ferris, he writes this fantastic detective series, and it is hot, and the guy in it is the sweetest thing, and he's always getting in trouble. But I said, you need an image for this guy. When women read these kind of books, they want to be able to picture him. So we hunted till we found a good-looking guy for Dev Haskell, and now, you know, the women can fantasize. So I think the covers are very important. I do.
They are, and you know what? I'll have to tell you, because I've read a lot of different romance and erotica novels, and they have these really mystical, whimsical pictures on the front, and, you mm-hmm. know, you look at it, and you're like, ooh, I wonder what this is going to be about, and then you get into the book, and you're like, what is that cover even talking about? So, I mean,
yeah.
So the fact that you can relate your covers to the story in your book is, and then you can, you're right, you can go back to that cover and like,
So, yeah.
Definitely. Well, hey, Sable, we have a caller, if you wouldn't mind.
Okay.
I would love to see who is piping in here. So let's see if we can get online here in just a second. Good morning. Welcome to Behind the Words. You're on the air.
Hi. Are you talking to me?
I am talking to you.
Well, good morning, Lori. Good morning, Sable. My name is Carol Lilla, and I am one of Sable's street team. And let me tell you, she is one hell of a lady. We've had more fun talking with her online. We've talked about recipes, sexy toys, books, men. She is absolutely phenomenal. She's everybody's little sister, daughter. Her books are phenomenal. I laugh, I cry. She's so approachable. If you email her, she responds. She's just phenomenal. I cannot say enough about this gal.
Thank you, Carol. It's wonderful to hear your voice.
I know. It's nice to hear yours, too.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for calling in. Do you have any questions that you'd like to ask Sable while you're here?
No, because she's so approachable. When I have questions, all I have to do is email her and I get answers. But I wanted to tell her that I have three of my girlfriends from my office all indulged in her Hell Yeah series. And we sit there at lunch and we laugh and we cry and we talk about the scenes like they're real people. It's just
that's amazing. What a compliment. Thank you so much.
Excellent.
You're so welcome, and it's so good to talk to both of you.
Yes, you too. Thank you so much for calling.
Hey, have a great day. Bye.
You too. Bye-bye. Awesome. See, it's true. All it does, it makes a huge difference. So being that she called in from your street team, tell me, you know, before we get to wrap up, I'm curious to know how that works, because you said you have over 100 people, did you say, or even more than that, on your street team?
Well, I have a fan page that we have, there's thousands on. And then I had a forum where I had almost 500, and it got to the point where I didn't think I was serving them appropriately. So what we did, we've come up with a street team, and we put out a blanket invitation. And right now I think there's somewhere around 150, 160. We're just now working on it. But those people, they're in a closed room. I come in, I visit, I talk to them when I can. If they can help me with anything, they love to do that, you know, helping me promote or telling me what works, what doesn't, helping me name Noah's horse or something. Sometimes I'll be working away and I can't remember a detail, and I don't actually have to stop and go back and look up the detail. I can put it out on the street team. I say, does anybody remember what I called Nathan's dog? And within 2 or 3 seconds, I go, oh, well, her name is Lady. They know this stuff as well as I do, and that's such a compliment. But it's like having people in the room with me that will help me as I try to work. I do try to get to know them. Carol gave me the best lasagna recipe you can just possibly imagine. In fact, I put out a cookbook not too long ago that had a lot of our recipes in it, recipes that were in the book, excerpts from the book. It's called Sable Does It in the Kitchen. And then
yes, I have that book.
They're just there. Now, sometimes they're on more than one author street team. And authors, I love to cooperate with authors. I will promote you. If you will email me or message me and tell me I've got a book free, I've got so-and-so, I will share. I want people to supporting one another is so much more beneficial than tearing each other down. Our market is the world. There's room for all of us. So the street team is very beneficial to me, not only in helping me to promote my work and helping me to think of new ideas, places to be, things to do, but they're just also there as a emotional support sometimes, So people like Carol are just, I just wouldn't trade them for anything.
That's awesome. They become your friends and like your own little tiny personal network. So that's fabulous that you're able to connect with them on that level. And there being so many of them. that can be a challenge. I know I've participated in street teams before, and they're all different, the way that the authors leverage their people. Sometimes there's a lot of engagement. Sometimes you feel like you're just another name on a list that they're sending a mass email to. So the fact that you're able to connect with them is a really, really super awesome. So,
well, I can do a better job. I will admit that the company, the editing and company, has made me not as good as I used to be. But I will be better when I get my basket and my ducks in a row.
Well, Sable, I'm sure you're the only one that thinks that. I get told that all the time too. So I completely understand. I'm always striving to be better. But from the outside looking in, I think your street team and your readers and myself would all agree that you are doing a fabulous job balancing all of these wonderful things that you're doing. That is just great.
Thank you.
So as an author, and with the many different cowboy hats you wear, tell me about what your biggest challenge is, and if you had one piece of advice to offer to an aspiring author, what would it be?
Well, let me see. My biggest challenge is discipline. I tend to get involved in too many projects, and I need to – my brother tells me this all the time. He'll say, make me a list of everything you need to do. And he says, okay, now prioritize it. Now he says, start at the top and work down. And I go, but I need to do this and this and this and this. All needs to be done at the same time. and Barb and Ron do me that way too. They'll say, just stop. This is what's the most important thing. This is what you need to do first. And so trying to make everything happen at one time is a challenge. My family, I don't have a big family at all, but the ones I have are very supportive. I have had a difficult time in my community. I live in the South in a very conservative area, and that has not been a fun thing. But having said that, I tend to think that what I do has a value and it has a worth. And if I can make a person smile, then I think I've done something that's worthwhile.
Well, absolutely. And you've made me smile today, so thank you. I needed that today. Well, very good, Sable. It has been an absolute pleasure talking to you. And I would love for you to take a moment and tell all of our listeners where we can find you.
Okay. I have a website called sablehunter.com. I'm on Facebook. Just Sable Hunter, my personal page, and then Author Sable Hunter is my fan page. BukuLLC.com is going to be the website for the company. Buku Publishing is also on the on Facebook. It's going to be a connecting site. I Twitter @HunterSable. and I have an Amazon author page, and all of it's linked. If I post something on my fan page, it hits the Amazon author page, and it hits Twitter at the same time, which I don't understand how it happens, and if Barb wasn't as smart as she was, then I couldn't do it. But she makes everything work, of which I'm grateful for.
Excellent. Thank you, Barb.
Yes. So I'll just say, do you think we can do this? Oh, yeah, we can do that. So I don't know how it happens. It just works.
Excellent. Very good. Well, it has been a pleasure. And, Sable, I can't wait to dig even deeper into your books because they are what I have read of you so far has been wonderful. And so I encourage everybody that's listening, definitely look up Sable Hunter. And if you're looking for a sweet and spicy read, you definitely are in the right spot. She's going to entertain you in ways that you didn't know you can be entertained.
Okay.
So,
<yeah.
laughs> thank you so much for joining me today.
You're
and I look
welcome.
Forward to following your work. And definitely come back on. I would love to continue to chat with you on another
sure.
show about your many, many ventures. So I appreciate
okay.
you so much.
it was wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, everybody, that is a wrap for today. I hope you will join us next week where we are jumping back into the horror genre with a new author, Robert Friedrich. Thank you so much for listening. This has been a copyrighted podcast owned by the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network, LLC, and produced by Pam Stack. Thank you so much for listening, and have a wonderful week.